Good evening, everyone. This great university has got quite a lot to do with the fact that this is an age in love with science. I'm quite in love with it myself, actually, when I can get my liberal arts educated mind round its wilder shores. But for many of us, there are questions about how our culture does and should respond to the powerful dictates of science and scientific discovery. In particular, this applies to the world of the creative arts, and in still more particular, it applies to the age of digital technology with its transforming effect on the making, distributing, owning, and exchanging of artistic production. It's often stated, but it's no less true for that, that we overestimate the impact of new technology in the short term and underestimate it in the long term. And this is just as true of digital media as it was of the telegraph or the telephone. But paradoxically, it is also just as easy to miss the potential altogether by looking at the future through the lens of the present. History is littered with examples, such as the 1878 pronouncement by Sir William Preece, chief engineer of the post office, that the Americans have need of the telephone, but we do not. We have plenty of messenger boys. It's difficult to project oneself into the future and let go of what you know. Proust said that the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. It's generally easier to assume tomorrow will be a slightly different version of today than it is to grapple with the deeper transformations which might be taking place. The real revolutions happen when a whole category of human endeavour undergoes what physicists would call a phase transition, and the world realigns to accommodate the change. Thus, a car is not a faster horse, although they are both ways to get from A to B. It turns out that the impact of broadband goes beyond it simply being faster than dial-up internet. Mobiles aren't just footloose landlines. They are personal communicators in a way once only envisaged on Star Trek. The social change that each of these technologies has brought has gone beyond the obvious technical innovation. This is, to a large extent, the nature of the social adaptation of technology, and it has been like this through history. We may today indeed be in a revolutionary phase, but as Terry Pratchett says, revolutions come round again. That's why they're called revolutions. So what might history teach us about the overall impact of digital media on our societies, and in particular about the future role of art and of the arts? In the first place, it shows us that only once technologies are really absorbed into everyday life do we see clearly the impact they have on social and cultural relations. If you take the onset of electricity, in a little over 100 years, society was fundamentally remade, one could argue democratized, as a result of electrification. It led to the rise of the middle class, the expansion of public education, commuter lifestyles, and much more besides. It was believed that it was going to lead to a society of leisure, peace, and goodwill, of course, but that is par for the course. But leaving aside the electric guitar, less combustible lighting in theatres, and Karlheinz Stockhausen, perhaps the foremost impact of electrification in our artistic and cultural lives has been the development of mass culture, not least through broadcasting, now entering a new and yet more astonishing phase via the internet. Cultural policy in the United Kingdom is very slow to evolve. Not perhaps as slow as it is in France, but nonetheless, it is exasperating to see how many serious politicians still think of the arts as something to take their friends to on a wet Saturday. And if that's what you think it is, then it's not surprising it takes a marginal place in what I call the heavy lifting of political life. But in recent years, sustained and generous support from government, allied, I would claim, to the passionate commitment of the Arts Council to the broadening of participation in culture, really has begun to bring about a change in attitudes. The idea that culture is essentially the property of a priesthood of creative artists, curators, and scholars has been replaced, I hope forever, by a far richer, more inspiring one, which includes at its very core engagement with audiences. And now the great technical shift of our age from the analog world to a digital one has given that idea an entirely new dimension, and one which stretches far beyond what we formerly thought of as access. Like other general purpose technologies before it, digital media challenge traditional notions across the spectrum. In the arts, immense new opportunities immediately spring up. The National Theatre's Phèdre can be streamed live to Oshkosh Community Centre or the Scarborough Odeon. Viral marketing can sell concert tickets with barely a penny of cost. Tools of unimaginable power and subtlety join the paintbrush and the chisel. And not only can we all make art if we want to, we can all distribute it across the world for nothing. With every opportunity come challenges, often and especially to the established priesthoods and ascetic canons. How do we define an artist when anyone can distribute their work and ideas online? Where is the line between amateur and professional? Is there even one? Where are the boundaries of the arts institutions to be drawn? Is it the job of an opera company, for instance, to fill seats in a theatre, or does it necessarily have a wider educational role? Is the future of the museum, as Nick Sirota and Neil McGregor said recently, as a multimedia institution? I think it is, but I don't believe that such a future requires that the traditional role of the building-based institution be debased. Indeed, if current trends in the music business become generalised, then the value of the live experience is seemingly greater than ever. Booming admissions to our museums and ticket sales to our theatres, which seem to be holding up despite the economic situation, would seem to support that argument. We should embrace the challenges, and what's more, we should welcome the imperative to think all over again about those old trade-offs between excellence and participation. As the writer William Gibson once said, the future is already here, it's just not very evenly distributed. Some artists and arts institutions are already well on the way, and indeed most have now built the digital foundations they need effectively to run their activities, be it websites, box office systems, or the rest. But it turns out that isn't the real challenge. As when a walker crests what they thought was the peak, only to be faced with another larger one beyond, the real job lies not in digitising what we already do, but in understanding the place of the arts in the digital world and what it means to make and present art in that context. To compare for a moment with another area which is debating these topics hotly as I speak and in which I engage myself in another area of my life, it seems likely that the task facing newspapers is less one of earning money from online versions of their print publications, as in figuring out a whole new model for journalism and news reporting, both in terms of who does it, to whom, and how is it paid for. Digital technology, like every other scientific advance before it, can, indeed usually must, be a destroyer of value in some senses. Children will read differently. They will speak and write their language differently, have no need to develop skills which their parents toiled long years to acquire. Artists will create the plausible appearance of reality without ever setting hand to pencil or building a physical representation. Audiences will never again feel that sense of overwhelming wonder that was inspired by the first talkies or even the first James Bond film. But the lesson of history is that just as new technologies change us, so technology is captured, changed, and enriched by the animating power of creative artists and by that element of human creativity that is in all of us. Digital media fundamentally shift control from artists and producers in the direction of what some call the people formerly known as the audience. Does that kind of widening of participation constitute a diminution of the role of the supreme artist or the physical gallery or theatre? Surely not. I am certainly not ready to wave Aristotle goodbye, Kate. Does it necessarily result in a blurring of critical standards or a lessening of resources for the physical operation? No, I don't believe it does. But it does require a radical reassessment of roles and relationships. Today, participation is not just about access to the work of great artists and performers. It is also about an opportunity to share in the creative process. Art has never been finished in the sense that every time it's experienced, it changes. But digital technology permits, and some would say demands, the endless possibility of remastering the master. So a forest of new questions springs up about the nature of art and artists. The pessimists see the end of a reliable hierarchy of excellence, not just moral but also cultural relativism. I think they're wrong, but that is a challenge to those of us who care about these questions of value and purpose, as well as the pure excitement of the technology. Today, this ancient debate has been given a new inflection by the ubiquity of digital media. What is the right first step to take? Well, I know one thing that is unlikely to work. As far as I'm aware, there was never a detailed national plan for the electrification of the arts. So I'm sceptical about the chances of Lord Carter's Digital Britain report furnishing us with any definitive answers on their digitisation. What delights me about digital media is not only the opportunity they offer to artists to create in new ways, but the way they give explosive new meaning to the idea of participation in culture. At last, I think and hope, the ability to create, consume, experience and exchange creative art in some shape or form will be unmistakably part of what every child assumes as its birthright. And that is a politically as well as artistically transforming idea. It means that culture can never again be shoved to the sidelines of a serious political party's manifesto for a good society, as something that is the recreational choice of a privileged minority. It becomes the meat and potatoes of our social existence. And for me, that's a better argument for supporting the arts than dubious figures about their contribution to tourism or to regeneration. Thank you very much.